Hello, you're listening to Ready, Set, Go Real Estate Investing Podcast, presented by Brandon Elliott. This show will be going over all aspects of real estate investing and is intended to educate, motivate, and prepare you to take action on your first or next real estate investment. For more information, please visit BrandonElliottInvestments.com. Thank you for listening and enjoy.
Welcome back, everyone, to Ready, Set, Go Real Estate Investing Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Brandon Elliott. I'm excited today. We got a company based out of San Diego. This gentleman is over enjoying Spain right now, which sounds incredible. But what's really cool is that these guys really focus, the bread and butter here is being a turnkey facilitator in one fashion or another, educator and showing the average person how they can invest in real estate without all the headaches, all the the nuances in between and all the headaches, right? We just want to avoid that because real estate can definitely be simplified, but some people don't have all the time, all the energy, efforts. They don't really want to put in all that work and headache that can go into it. The learning curves, dealing with real estate or properties in general, there could be costly mistakes that could definitely put you in the wrong direction. But with that being said, we truly believe that every single human being out there should get at least three properties or more underneath their belt for a backup plan, for a retirement, for not putting all your eggs in one basket, counting on your employer because they could let you go at any given time, right? So having real estate can get you the tax benefits, the cash flow, the appreciation, and so much more at the end of the day. It gives you more strength. And so, yeah, really excited to have you on today, Axel. How we doing? How's Spain today, my friend?
What?
How's Spain today, my friend?
It's good. It was slightly cloudy, but it's like permanent spring, basically.
That's right. So talk to me. Anybody out there that doesn't know who you are, where you're from, about the company, do you mind just giving that 30,000 foot view for us?
Yeah, absolutely. So Idea Wealth Grower was founded after I had started develop my own real estate investing portfolio, and people, friends, family, anybody else started urging me to also make what I learned and, the path that I went available to others. And it became pretty clear. I mean, that was at a time when we were living in the Santa Barbara area, which, is not that far from where you and I normally are. And so it was pretty obvious that it would be hard to invest in that area because of just the price level that is there, and especially if you want to generate cash flow. That's how it all started. And ultimately, what we're doing now is two things. We're offering people who really want to learn how to do it so that ultimately they can do it on their own. I be their mentor and they can join our mentoring program. And then for people, and you mentioned earlier, all walks of life, which, by the way, also includes accredited investors. And the distinction that I make is there are many, many different ways how you can invest in residential real estate. Yep. But it's not that easy to have the combination of real control over the assets. It's really your assets, not a syndication. It's not a trust or anything like that. It's really your asset and very little time that you need to constantly spend on managing or overseeing it. And that's kind of the niche that we found. And I applied it initially to myself, and now we're offering it to anybody who's interested.
I love that. And so when did you start the company, and how many real estate doors did you have before creating this to kind of open up to friends, family, and the public?
We started the business itself, the company, in 2016.
Yeah.
And we started the business for ourselves to then accumulate the properties. We currently have 10 properties and keep looking to add more on a regular basis. And in 2019-ish was basically when we started bringing other people in.
Oh, that's so cool. Awesome. And how many people have you helped at this point?
Well, purely from the investment side, I would say probably somewhere below 100, but in the current, I call it the tribe of people who went through or are part of the mentoring program and investing, that's about 2,000, 3,000, something like that.
Very cool.
I'm not giving you these kind of precise numbers because over time we made a change. We started out with having basically a lifetime program. You signed up and then you were in it forever, but it turned out that wasn't really the best way to go. And so ultimately now we have programs for 6 months and 12 months. And obviously, when somebody goes in a 6 month program, yes, they are part of the tribe, but then they're done. And if they don't decide they want to continue, I would still call a member of the community, right? So all of those together is several dozens, but the current group is probably around 25.
Yeah, that's so good. I've made mistakes in the past with that as well, which you still get lifetime access to some of those founding members to like, you know, an online course. But as far as the community growing, it really comes down to people need a beginning and an end time frame. Otherwise, they don't show up for a while. They may be in it for the first 90 days. Afterwards, they kind of take off for a year or so, come back and start asking amateur questions again. So it brings down the community a little bit. And you want an end point so that people can, you know, maybe the first 90 days they take massive action. After that, a couple months, they kind of fall off. 6 months, they're like, oh, I only got 6 months left. Or, hey, I only got 3 months left. You know, they kind of, you get more wind in their sails, I guess, to take full action. And then when they take full action, you get real results. So it ends up being a lot more impactful versus kind of that lifetime thing. They keep postponing it and not prioritizing.
Yep. And it's actually, I mean, I would say anybody, when you have a relatively narrowly defined way of going about something, after you've done it 2, 3, maximum 4 times, you have pretty much a good idea. Then it becomes more like an email. Hey, I found this deal. What do you think? Should I do it? Or do you see anything that's wrong with it? Which is not really mentoring or coaching anymore. Right. And so you're totally right. It, you know, after you basically had the opportunity not just to learn about it, but actually doing it a few times, then most people can actually go on their own.
I love it. And how did you get your education?
Try and error. Basically.
Poor guy. You know? Poor guy. Yeah. I could tell. I can hear the pain in your voice from saying that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you do stuff. I was in the Air Force, if you look at my bio, and we were stationed in a location where they were building houses, and there were houses, and I thought I was smart by buying a house and then renting it to a fellow officer. And he honestly tried to claim that he had never heard that you need to open the chute of the fireplace, right? So he basically tried to make a fire without opening the chute. Basically, all the soot fire brigade came by to, you know, because all the fire alarms went off and stuff like that. Lesson learned was, in all our turnkey properties, we always, if there is one, we close off the fireplace, you know. So, but that was like $5,000 worth of repairs just because. And, you know, how do you prove to somebody that you should know that, right? Like, and we didn't post signs around this fireplace, don't use or open the chute or anything. Yeah, you know, that's just one little example how it can go, you know.
You can't fix stupid, my friend, and that's tough, you know. And you weren't anticipating that, but that guy literally tried burning down your home, which is crazy.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, for me, the lesson on keep this light is, the guy was in the morning going out flying fighter jets with me, and in the night he claimed that he couldn't know that there's a chute in a fireplace, right?
Yeah. It's like, do we really want him up in the air flying?
Exactly. That was my question. That was seriously my question.
That's impressive. I love it. Well, talk to me. How are you guys getting leads right now? And, you know, what are some of the benefits of the turnkey solutions that you guys are offering?
Yeah. So, I mean, we have a podcast too. So maybe if you're interested, I can reciprocate and have you on my podcast. We are basically on all the different social media platforms. And we're also providing like a newsletter and articles and stuff like that about the specific things that we do. And I also go a little bit beyond, because I feel it's important for our community or anybody to get a little bit of what's going on in the market, especially since we had this massive shift from the time before, basically 2022 and now. But in turnkey investing, the real point is that we have developed this network of relationships. So the turnkey providers are obviously the core thing in the middle. And just, I don't know, I think it might be worth for somebody who is new to your show and in your audience, just for a moment, what's a turnkey provider? It's basically a company. I always describe it, they find an ugly duckling in a good neighborhood. They buy it, and it's typically the ugly duckling because the owners, for whatever reason, didn't want to spend money on you know, maintenance and upkeep and stuff like that. So they can get it for relatively cheap. And the good ones, the ones that we work with, they have their own renovation team as employees. So they now own the asset, a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house or something like that. they send their renovation team in and first create what's called a statement of work, all the things that they're going to fix and renew. And that can go down to the studs with electrical and plumbing and sheetrock and new kitchen and bathrooms and all that stuff. And I'm mentioning this, it's going to be important in a moment. So they do the work. And let's say they bought it for $50,000 and they put another $40,000 in. So now they're $90,000 into this property. And they obviously, as a business, want to make money. And the first time they make money is to say, okay, what is a relatively comparative property in the same neighborhood? And let's say that's $120,000. I know those numbers may be different from location to location. But so they would make $30,000. But because they do the comparative analysis similar to an appraiser, that's the sales price. Now, we have also relationships with multiple different lenders who, as soon as we say, either myself or one of our clients says, okay, I want to buy this property from this turnkey provider ABC, they send their appraiser, and typically the appraiser comes out plus or minus a few thousand dollars from that sales price of $120,000. Now, here comes the part where it's important why I call it, and it should be called, turnkey provider. So they did all this. Now they put the price up. We said, okay, we buy it from you for $120,000. But before we go to closing, we encourage them to already find a tenant. And we want them to say, what do they think the price can be? And then we can use things like deal check and rental meter to see, is that a realistic rent? So the $120,000 house, we would want to see something like between $1,100, $1,200, maybe $1,250 in rent. Somewhere that gets us close or above the 1% rule. Better is even higher is even better, but you know, that's what we would want. So now we actually get to the closing table and we're basically closing on the deal. We're getting our financing and we already have a signed lease agreement in place. And in the contract is also that list, that statement of work of all the things they touched, because that's a guarantee that anything they touched, if it breaks in the first year that the tenant is in there, is on that. Okay, and so then the last part in this is they also, that same exact organization that found the ugly duckling, made it into a pretty swan, sold it to us, got the tenant, they are also property management, right? And so with the closing, we're also signing the property management agreement. And this is ultimately how we can be then in touch with that turnkey provider once a month for 30 minutes to say, how's my property or my two, my three, my four, my five, however many you have with that particular one doing. And Ideal Wealth Grower is curating their properties and we're always paying attention to where are they and how high is the performance. I think that's one of the biggest things. Most people who are generally interested in residential real estate investing, they have always only heard to look for buy low and sell high. Well, we want to build a cash flow portfolio for the long term. So selling is not the main point we're looking for. The main point is performance and cash flow. And that's why that balance between how much do you pay for it and how much does it rent for is so important. And then it's just rinse and repeat from there.
I love that. Yeah, I think to summarize it all, you know, I like to consider turnkey companies to really be like the guardian angels, right? The ones that come in as the investor, do all the heavy lifting because they have the business model in place. They know how to find a beat up property at a discounted rate, do the full renovation on it without all the headache involved. Afterwards, rent it out to a well-qualified tenant and then, you know, give it to you on a silver platter with rates and terms and cash flow that still actually makes sense for what you're looking to add to your portfolio, right? So then the mom and pop or just random person that is working the 9-to-5 or whatever it may be that they want to diversify, you know, they want to diversify into real estate, they want to own it. They just don't want to put in all the headache that could potentially take place. And they're willing to pay, you know, more of a premium to get there, but still have cash flow. I think it's a no-brainer. And it sets them up for, you know, like we talked about, the cash flow, the tax benefits, the appreciation, and really just a backup plan, which is huge. You know, you did mention the 1% rule. And so for anybody out there that doesn't know, the 1% rule, correct me if I'm wrong, there's 2 and 3% rule as well. But obviously, the higher you get up on those percentage, the class area starts kind of typically going down. You find yourself in the hood around the 3% rule. So a 1% rule would be, you know, whatever all money that you're in on the deal, you should be cash flowing roughly around that same, 1% on a monthly basis, correct?
Yeah, I try to keep it a little simpler. I'm basically like, if we say we found a $150,000 house that a turnkey provider is offering, we need to have confirmation from them and any tools that we might want to use that it makes $1,500 in rent per month.
Cool.
That's just 1% of the sales price. And when you go in, even with the high interest rates that we have right now, and we do some creative stuff to keep the down payment really low in the area of maybe 10 to 15% instead of 20 to 25%, you still want to make positive cash flow, some money. And obviously in the first year or two, it's always very little, especially with high interest rate. It might only be $150, $200 a month, but you want to have positive cash flow. And so when you keep that ratio at least to 1%, you will have some positive cash flow. Now, if you can get 2%, sure, but you have to, like you said, Brandon, it's totally true. And I don't really know any turnkey providers who want to touch even 2%, or very rarely, because their risk goes up. And if you don't mind, I want to point out where this point is, because some people might say, well, but wouldn't I save those $20,000, $30,000 that they make profit between what they bought it for, renovated for, and then put it on the market? And the thing is, like the big ones that we work with, they do 80 to 100 new houses a year. Mm-hmm. So if they, in one of those properties, find something that they didn't see initially when they went in and made that statement of work list of all the things they wanted to change, because suddenly they open up a corner and the floor is totally rotten and stuff. If you have a volume of 80 to 100, you can say, okay, on this one, we might not make $20,000. We might only make 10 because it was more expensive. If you're a single flipper or a wholesaler or a small operation, you don't have that opportunity, right? So the risk is obviously for them to mitigate. And one way for them to mitigate it is that they don't go to places where the goal is to make it a 2% or even higher, because then the likelihood that the property is borderline falling apart is higher and higher and higher the more you have this high percentage, right? So the 1% properties are more dependent on the general location. And that's also, you and I talked about San Diego or Santa Barbara or stuff like that. There is no chance in hell you will ever find that. So where do we invest? In Idaho, in Ohio, in Tennessee, in Florida, those kind of places, right? And even Florida is getting tricky to find any. So there are locations around the country where you can make that balance between the price that we have to pay to become owners and full control of the property and the rent it can make. Those are the places that are not necessarily where the majority of people live. That's just a fact. I mean, there's what, like 40 million people in California and like 60 or 80 million people up and down the East Coast, but there aren't the properties that make us the cash flow.
That's right. Yes, that Midwest really.
Yeah, right.
They say Midwest, but it's really Mideast in my opinion. But yes, that really sets you up.
I just call it mid.
Yeah, we just call it mid, right?
Somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, somewhere in the middle. But that's where, more cash flow, more affordable price entries for people to jump into where it will cash flow. Talk to me. You told me, a few of your learning curves with, the fire situation with, but talk to me about any type of learning curves or things for a potential person that's interested. Like, they're listening to this and they're saying, wow, Axel, like, this is amazing. I need some turnkeys in my life. It makes sense. What do they need to be aware of or consider as a potential risk? Like, what kind of due diligence should they be doing on their own to make sure that they are really penciling this out properly?
Well, if you want to do it on your own, you would have to spend time learning what constitutes a good deal.
Yep.
Right. And it is particularly hard to do because obviously turnkey, and I'm saying obviously, it's maybe not that obvious for everybody in the audience, but turnkey providers' properties don't typically show up on the MLS or at Zillow or Realtor.com. Yep. Or Redfin or anything like that. It's basically pretty similar to an off-market deal. So to learn what a good deal or a bad deal is not just the numbers, because to really learn that, you would have to kind of go into the property, take a closer look, and learn what are the things that are really expensive? You know, things like all the systems, like water heaters, air conditionings, roofs, windows. Those are like, all of them are like 5-digit expenses if you have to replace them. Give you a quick little thing, you know, like most of the turnkey providers nowadays, they say, if something isn't 8 to 10 years life left, get rid of it and put a new one in. Why? Because we, as the investors and ultimately owners of the property, start complaining. If they say, oh, this thing still works for the next 4 or 5 years, that only means now when that thing craps out, excuse my French,
yeah,
we as investors have to pay 100% for it.
Yep.
This is something that people sometimes forget, right? We have now deals because of our relationships with lenders and with the anticipation that sometime in the next 5 years, interest rates will probably come down again. They kind of have to.
They have.
So we have deals. Yeah, we have deals where we can get into the deal for 10%, 12%, 14% down, when most of the time you hear as an investor, you have to pay 20 or 25%.
Yep.
Well, are we doing there? We are basically delaying the gratification of cash flow by getting less of our own money in, but then later get more cash flow when we refinance anytime in the next 5 years. But what I'm getting at is that money, imagine you need a new roof, a new air conditioning, a new water heater, and new windows. Just that is probably altogether you're looking at $20,000, $25,000. Now, here's the difference. If we do this as part of the purchase, then, and let's say we get 10% down, then the whole thing costs us $2,000. If we do this 3 or 4 years later, we have to come up with those $20,000, $25,000 out of pocket, which means it has to come out of our cash flow that we made, right? So that's why it's important to say, okay, even if something is still functioning in a property, really pay close attention how much reasonably is the life left. And that's why good turnkey providers and good analysts say anything that's not at least 5 to 10 years left, I think even more like 8 to 10 years left, or out of warranty. That's the other thing. We are big time proponents to say, if you get a new water heater, don't just get the cheapest one, get one with a maximum 8-year warranty, for example. Right. So that's kind of the longest you can get. Air conditionings, you can get up to 10 years. Roofs, you can get 25 years. So also pay attention to the warranty of the items that are being put in. But the important thing here is, whether we do 10% down or 20% down, that means 80% of the costs of the thing that goes into the renovated property is paid by someone else. And people might say, yeah, but ultimately you have to pay it. Yes, but think about it. The money that you have in your pocket, these little green pieces of paper, what did a 20, something that has a 20 on it, buy you 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, and what does it buy you today? Now, yep, go do this forward, right? In the 30-year mortgage that you can get on that turnkey property, you're paying this water heater, this air conditioning, this roof, the windows, and all the other stuff that goes into over that whole period of time. That means every monthly payment, the purchasing power of these little green pieces of paper goes down and down and down and down. Right? But the number is always going to be the same. That's the beauty of the type of investing in residential real estate compared to commercial, is that you get a 30-year mortgage. And in our case, yes, we are speculating a little bit on lower interest rates because that will ultimately help us with the cash flow. But even if it never were to happen, we would be able to pay this down in 30 years, same amount. And obviously, every year we're increasing the rent a little bit, at least at the level of inflation, which is another aspect that makes these investments so beautiful, because you're inflation protected automatically.
Yeah, that's very good. I love that. And I think that's a huge reason that so many people don't realize the inflation of like what that really does to your money. And just like you said, what that $20 was worth 20 years ago versus what it's worth today, what it can buy you, it's next to nothing. In California, we just read the other day that the minimum wage is $20 now for like fast food workers. It's like, absolutely. Me, right?
In-N-Out Burger or stuff like that, for sure. I mean, the thing is, it shouldn't really be called inflation.
Yeah.
It should be called what's the loss in purchasing power.
Yeah.
And when they have the, you know, like CNBC or whatever is announcing what it was last month for March or whatever, and it says it was 3.7%, that's the loss in purchasing power that you experience.
Yeah.
And if you go like we had, you know, 2023 or 22, I don't remember, was like 7.5% loss of purchasing power. right? That's and you can ask yourself, if you're listening to us here, you can ask yourself, do I get enough increase in wages to balance the loss in purchasing power?
Yep.
And there is a limit on how often you can go to your boss and say, I need an increase.
Yep.
But what you can do, and which anybody understands, is to say, hey, everybody, you have heard we had a loss of purchasing power last year in 4%. Sorry, the value of the house is still the same value as it was last year. So I have to make up for this loss in purchasing power. That's why I have to ask you to pay me 4% more in rent.
Yeah, it's tough. And that's what's taking place. You know, it's kind of like a domino effect, a chain reaction, and it's not helping really anywhere. And that's why, like you said, you know, eventually rates will have to come down to kind of level things out and so forth. But it does make it more difficult at the time being. You know, you mentioned as far as cash flow and kind of like capital expenditures, I think it's important to touch on just for a second so we don't just like glance over that for some of the listeners that may be kind of clueless a part of this. I always like to recommend a minimum of $200 to $300 per month on cash flow, but it's good to jump into deals that you can actually, like we said, it's you're hedging your bets against inflation. And you're betting on, you know, you're going to get appreciation over time. You're having somebody else pay down your mortgage, which is incredible. And if you're looking at your cash to cash ratio percentage, like if you have little for your down payment and it, you know, you start getting with your cash flow, you're getting your down payment back within a year or two. That can be incredible in many ways. So for capital expenditure, for those who don't really understand, are you guys taking into consideration, obviously, you mentioned kind of all the big ticket stuff, roofs, windows, HVAC, water heater, and so forth. For those items, if it's less than, you know, 5 to 8 years left, you're basically just replacing it and trying to get the longest warranty attached. With that being said, are you still counting into the capital expenditure if it's got like 10, 12 years left, 15 years for the roof? Are you still adding in to get a true cash flow of what, you know, if it rents out for $1,500 a month, you know, it's a 15-year roof right now remaining, let's just say it's easy numbers of $100 a month or something, you know, to make up for that, for the replacement and inflation and so forth of whatever the hell that will be in 15 years. Are you actually minusing that from your overall gross income coming in?
Yeah, absolutely. The way we go about it is we basically take the first part is basically the mortgage, whatever the monthly mortgage payment is, which includes the principal, interest, insurance, and property tax. So that's kind of like a fixed number that happens every month. And then on top of that, I'm a big proponent. I call it the 555. So put 5% of the gross rent away for maintenance, 5% for capital expenditure, and 5% for vacancy. And that last 5%, there are now some things that you can get insurance policies and stuff like that and let the tenants pay for that. But in general, the starting point for the calculation, I still do and recommend that. And so when you do the mortgage payment and the 8 to 10% property management fee plus those 15%, then you actually get to a true expense number. And then you want to still see, depending on how much your down payment is, I agree with you, if you do a 20% down payment, you should see something like $200. I used to say 300, but with the high interest rates, it's just really hard to get to 300. If you do less, if you say, okay, I go with a 10% down payment, you can also afford to have less cash flow because you basically later on get a much better cash on cash return. There's one little nugget of information that is sometimes forgotten, and I call that the pivot point. Because we are not doing this, your audience, you and I and my clients, we are not doing this to own one property. So one of the things that I believe a good mentor, a good guide should do is always for yourself and also for your clients, keep the big picture in mind. And the big picture is we want to build a portfolio. You know, not everybody necessarily needs to have 10 properties or 20 properties like I do, but you need to probably have at least 8 or 9 or 10 if you ever want to say, okay, I want to live purely from the cash flow. So does that then mean if you take me, do I actually put 15% of the gross income into some kind of account from 10 properties? And the answer is no. And I call that the pivot point where you see how much is a realistic amount for the size of my portfolio. Now, I have a funny, some people call it funny. I would agree it's somewhat of a funny way to look at it. I asked my turnkey providers, if you had to replace a roof, how much is that? And they say $6,000 to $8,000, depends a little bit on the size of the house. So I asked myself, how many roofs are going to be damaged to a point that I'm not reporting it to insurance, but still have to replace? And I came to the conclusion it's probably somewhere between 3 or 4 at a time. And then you translate these 6,000 to 8,000 into that, and you end up with a number of about 25,000 in my case. Now you, Brandon, you might say, I want 20,000. Or somebody else might say, I think I feel better if I have 30,000. But if you really go and say for every property, you put 15% aside every month, as you keep adding more and more properties, there comes a point where your reserves have accumulated to $20,000, $25,000, $30,000. And that's the pivot point where you can say, now I only have to put money back in if I take any money out, right? Because otherwise the number that you would have sitting there in cash is just getting insanely high the more properties you add to your portfolio. And it really at some point makes no sense anymore because there won't be that many repairs, especially if you're high quality property and maintenance is done in a proper way and property management pays attention to differentiate what is really something that is just wear and tear and where is it just mistreatment by the tenant and who needs to be held accountable for that, right? And I have examples where I have tenants who have been in the property since I bought it. We once made a kind of agreed upon repair because they wanted to do something in the basement that wasn't really a livable basement, and I put some money in, they put some money in, they will never leave and they always pay on time, right? So that's kind of the thing to know, that it's not a forever thing. You not forever have to, whatever your numbers are, mine are 5, 5, 5 or 15%. That's until you reach a comfortable number where you can say, whatever happens to my portfolio, I always have enough reserve.
Yeah, that's so good. I love that. Well, man, this is very impactful. I think this information right here should be shared more because there's so many people that don't want to roll up the sleeves and like get, you know, into the nitty gritty or the risk factor of buying the distressed property or completing the full renovation and dealing with all of that, right? Like getting the tenant or finding the good property management company. So a facilitator like yourself that handles all that and really orchestrates it all for them in a professional manner and helps them with the proper education on what they need to know, the nitty gritty in between, and then sets them up with the alley-oop. I mean, it's a no-brainer, right? So I love this. How can people get a hold of you? And what does the future look like for you guys? I'm just curious, where do you plan on taking this?
Okay, well, we obviously would love to have more people because, and I mentioned this before you hit record, because of the environment that we are in right now, from if you think about it through the lens of an investor in real estate, we used to have competition from all the people who also wanted to get into residential real estate just to own it and live in it. And that market has pretty much dried up. I mean, you have probably heard, just like I have, how many brokerages and real estate agents are basically quitting because there's nobody buying anything, right? So what used to be, I was literally asked a couple of years ago by even our turnkey providers to, in 72 hours, to decide, do you want it or don't you want it? We have so many other people who want it. Now they keep sending me lists and lists and lists of properties, great deals. Sometimes they even incentivize, they pay closing costs or buy down the interest rate and stuff just to keep some movement in the market, right? So where the future is going, I believe what people are vastly underestimating or misinterpreting is everything to be anchored in this high interest rate, where I'm saying right now, you can get it down to a 10%, you make very little cash flow. But when the interest rates ultimately come down, you make cash flow like a killing and you get the properties with all these incentives. I just, Brandon, for a moment, looking forward, just let's say in 2027, end of 2027, mortgage interest rates are back down towards 4%. There will be like a shark feeding frenzy of all the people who have been waiting to finally get into houses. And we will be lucky if we have 72 hours to make a decision. well, yeah. I want to be in a place, and I want you to be, and any people in your audience to be in a place to say, you know what, I'm watching this. I'm so glad I bought in 24 and 25. Let these guys go crazy. That's the thing, you know.
Yeah, I think it's really important for people to realize that supply and demand, right? There's not enough supply. Demand is still, in my opinion, still high, but there's so many people in fear mode because of the rates, right? Like, we got so spoiled with the rates for a long time. And so
they're not in fear mode. See, there are two things. Fear mode is one, but there are two other things. And I personally, if you ask me, think they're even more important. Number one is, even if they want to, they can qualify.
Yeah, they can qualify.
Right. So even if you're not fearful, you say, I just finished my master's degree. I've lived like a monk. Now I'm going to go and find myself a house.
Yeah.
You're not going to qualify. And the third part, so fear, not qualifying. Number three is, why is it so hard to get a loan or a mortgage, even with an 800 credit score? Because the banks, even the big ones, have unbelievable trillions of dollars of unsolved loans in their portfolio and unsolved bonds that they're supposed to have as a reserve against these loans that are basically worthless. Now, they got all these gimmicks from the Treasury Department to say you don't really have to account for this. You can pretend that you hold them for the next 15 years and then you sell them at maturity. The reality is that will never happen. Mm. But what it means is they know we have crappy loans on the commercial side. We have bonds that are worthless. We cannot bring in any risk at all because this whole thing is going to blow up in our face. So fear number one, then not qualifying number two, and number three, they don't even want to lend because every new loan is an additional risk. That's partially, in my opinion, why the market is basically stuck. Now, obviously, anybody who doesn't have to move doesn't want to get rid of their 3% or 3.5% mortgage anyway. But what it means is, why are we, for example, now not doing the traditional mortgages anymore, but DSCR mortgages? Because those qualify on the performance of the property. I don't want to get too deep, but you can get a mortgage where you say it has to do with what a nice guy and a really hardworking guy Brandon is. Or you can say, let's look at the property. What does it cost? How much rent does it make? What's the ratio? And when it makes significantly more rent income than the payment for the mortgage is, then the bank can say, that makes sense. There is no risk. If we ever get this property back, we will be able to make that rent and pay the mortgage no problem.
Yep.
So we're making almost everything DSCR these days. But those three things, fear, you know, qualify, and the bank doesn't want a loan anywhere unless it's an investment that really runs the numbers. That's why the market is so stuck. And when it gets unstuck, then everybody will run as if it's no tomorrow.
Yep. And then what is that going to do to the prices? All the prices are going to go skyrocketing up, I bet you.
Yeah. And well, that's the other thing, right? Like, you will have equity like you've never seen.
Yeah. So long story short, buy now, even with the rates. If you're making money off of the rates, you buy well today, just like every market.
Well,
if doom's gloom comes around and rates go up to 20%, buy with cash flow. So you're still doing well. And then once rates go down, then, you know, you always lock in fixed. But once the rates go down, you can refinance because you already own it and you're going to get appreciation. You're going to get, you know, better monthly payments and so forth. So all of that to say, the time to buy is now. Do not waste any time and it will set you up for success. But obviously, buy intelligently. Make sure that you're cash flowing day one so that you're not just breaking even. You're not, like, you have some backup for the capital expenditures, vacancies, management, you know, taxes. Insurance has been going up. I don't know about you, but my insurance has been going up the last couple of years on all of my properties. So just be mindful of all these things and it will set you up with a better, brighter future. So Axel,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's also, I really appreciate that you just said that, Brandon, because when you and I believe I can say that, mean and say positive cash flow on day one, that means after your mortgage, after your property management, after vacancy, maintenance, CapEx, all those things calculated in, and you making $150, $200, $250, then you can say I found a good deal.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. I love it. Well, Axel, how can people get a hold of you? And you just gave a bunch of time for me and all the listeners. What can we do to give back to you?
Well, I mean, you can just go to ideawealthgrower.com and find the button that pops up like 47 seconds after you got there to book a call, which I would love and talk to as many people as possible. And if you want to get in touch directly with me, you can send an email to axel@ideawealthgrower.com. And same thing. And then we can talk and see and set up a call and so forth. I always feel it's important to build a personal relationship first and say, hey, are we on the same sheet of music? Do we have goals where I can help you achieve your goals? And if you say, hey, I've always dreamt about a 100-unit apartment complex, I can send you people. It's just not what I can do. If you say, I want to have a portfolio of properties so in 10 to 15 years, I can retire and whatever happens in the economy, I don't bother any longer and my family is secure, then we should talk.
I love it. Well, Axel, I appreciate your time greatly. You're a wealth of knowledge. Listeners, I encourage you to reach out to Axel. He is just doing some incredible things and could definitely help you out if you're looking for more information about turnkey info. And with that being said, if you want to get a hold of me, you can always do so on Instagram. It is Brandon Elliott Investments. Otherwise, on Instagram, check out our new page for Credit Council Elite. Make sure you follow us there and love all of our little videos and all that fun stuff. But interact with us on there if you have any questions. As well as if you have not booked a call with us at creditcounselelite.com, what are you waiting for? We're teaching business owners just like you how to get $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, or even $500,000 plus at 0% interest. That's right. I did not stutter. $2,000, $3,000, or even $500,000 at 0% interest in the form of a lot of credit, my friends, so that you can get this 0% interest for the next 18 to 24 months, put it to work in real estate investments, just like we have. Grow and scale your business, hire on more people, put it towards marketing, so forth. If you want more information about that, there's a quick 10-minute video on our website for creditcounselelite.com. I encourage you to check that out. It'll probably answer a ton of your questions. It will also give you more questions to ask, which will be intelligent ones that we encourage to just schedule a call with us. Get a second opinion today to understand exactly where you're at, where your goals are, you know, where you're trying to go. And we can sit down and give you kind of the roadmap of what it looks like to get there. And even on top of that, if you decide to work with us, we'll show you exactly what that looks like. So check out creditcounselelite.com today. That's www.creditcounselelite.com. And we'll be sure to serve you at the best inside there. So if you haven't already, hit that subscribe button to Ready, Set, Go Real Estate Investing Podcast. You're going to want to do that right here, right now, so that you get the newest notification every single Monday after listening to a few episodes. Leave that 5-star review. Appreciate all love, all the support. You guys are amazing. And we'll catch you on the next one. Until next time, God bless. Axel, appreciate you, brother. Thank you.
Thank you.
For more information, please visit BrandonElliottInvestments.com. Also, please don't forget to like, share, and leave a comment below. Thanks again for joining. Until next time, God bless.